If your goal is to have a successful business, but you don't have a bigger purpose than that, you're going to quit the first time you fail sure. in business.
Most of the times our clients are older people. Mm-hmm. So the opportunity to work with the youngsters and see them actually grasp it and take mm-hmm. that opportunity on, I think that is quite exciting.
A lot of businesses struggling and asking ourselves the question, like, why is it that everybody has a business but nobody has money? And so we're like, no, we need to do something about this.
Before we start this podcast, I've got one little favor to ask you. Can you please hit the subscribe button down below so we can help more people every single week? Thank you. Welcome to the Right Place podcast, where we learn with you about businesses that thrive, connections that matter, and relationships that last. My name is Rudolf Rautenbach, and today I've got Gerald Joubert with me from Oxano 7. Gerald, nice to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, Rudolf. It's what a privilege to be your first guest in studio. Yeah. And thank you so much for inviting me today. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, good. I was going to say that it's our first time in studio. It's something that we're going to try out for the new year.
Yeah.
And I think it's important in that we're growing, and having you on the show in your studios, in your business studios. And I think that is exciting that we start the year off with something fresh, something yes. different, and then having a chat to you on what you guys do as well.
Awesome. No, I'm looking forward to our conversation. So, yeah, great way to start.
Good. Yeah. So you're in the leadership space, and I want to ask a little bit about how you see business growth in the leadership environment, how you help clients to grow their businesses through what you do.
Thank you. We know that leadership is very important. And when it comes to business, especially, business is leadership. I had a conversation just on Saturday evening. We were at a year-end function for the Speakers Association. And one of the ladies there was talking to me about a speech that she heard the current board director of Eskom talking about leadership and what they've done to turn. I think you were there as well in that. And it's amazing. I was listening to her talking about the things that he mentioned, what they did to turn around Eskom and eventually end load shedding. Yeah. And so for me, that was a very well practical example of the importance of leadership and the weight that leadership carries in a company or an organization. So, when we work with people, we know and understand that the business is people. And if you want to fix or help a business to grow, you have to help the people to grow, and especially the leaders, because they have to set the precedent. They have to set the bar for the rest of the organization, yes.
Yeah, very good. You mentioned leadership and you mentioned growth.
Yeah.
And on the growth side, we always look at business growth in terms of numbers, financials. We look at how they expand in terms of financial increases. But how would you otherwise define the growth of a business if you take out the financial part?
That's a very good question. I think the financials sometimes can be very deceiving. If we take there's an old interview of Jeff Bezos being interviewed in the earlier days of Amazon a couple of years ago. And the person that was interviewing him, he was saying, can you help me understand this? So you are a billionaire, but your company is not making any money. Like, you show year on year loss. So how does this work? And he was trying to explain to the person how it works and how they kind of use the company's financials to not show profits in a legal way in order for them to expand more. So growth is not always captured very well in the financial statements of a company. Yes, you can tell a lot about the company, and I'm sure if you just look at the bottom line, you might, be deceived as to what is actually happening in the company. I've seen companies with very good bottom line, and then the company folds all of a sudden. You're like, but what happened? They were making profit. Yeah. So for us, growth is really about the inner workings of the company. Going back to the people again, what's happening with the people? Is the leadership growing? Are they adding good talent? What is the sustainability in the company? What does the cash flow look like on a month-to-month basis? Sure. Is the company expanding? Is the vision of the company expanding? Mm. So there's a lot that goes on behind the closed doors in a company that is a bigger telltale of how the company is growing and the vision of that company as well. Amazon made a loss for, I think, 14 years before they eventually showed a profit. And yet today they're one of the biggest companies in the world. But for the longest time, it didn't seem like they are growing, even though they were expanding quite rapidly and growing the company. Yeah.
I saw on your profile that you speak about the holistic leadership, and how do you view that holistic thing? What is the elements that are packed into that holistic view on leadership and growth?
Mm-hmm. So we know that leadership is not, it's not just one, I can say it doesn't just have one face. Mm. As a leader, you need to have many skills, and you don't have to be an expert in anything, but you need to know a lot about a lot of things.
Sure.
So that you are able to determine whether the people that are the experts are actually experts and whether they are doing well. So leadership has to do with, we know, relationships, personal development, self-management, team management, understanding how companies operate, understanding discipline, vision, working on skills development for the people in your company or those people that you are leading. Mm. So enabling them to become the best that they can be, so that as a team that you can grow the company together. A leader is not sufficient enough. Like, if you don't have people following you, then you're not a leader. Yeah. You might think you are, but you're not leading anything.
Yeah.
So as a leader, you really need to have so many different elements built into your into your growth. You can't just, as a leader, grow in your management skill. You also need to be able to grow in your financial skills or in your sales skills or in your it's not just people, it's a lot, especially as a company leader or a leader of an organization. There's a lot that's going on, and as a leader you need to kind of touch on all of those things to have your pulse, your finger on the pulse for all of those different things. If you focus just on one thing, you might become very good at that thing, but you'll be completely oblivious to everything else that's going on. There's bad productivity in the company, but because you're not developing your own productivity or not focused on that, you don't even realize that your productivity is down, and then costs go up, and as costs go up, it eats into your profits, and then this is one of the reasons why, for example, Whole Foods in the US, why they eventually had to go public. Because they didn't watch their costs, and so the costs started eating their profits, and they couldn't keep the profit margin kept on getting smaller and smaller, and they didn't know why.
Sure.
And so later on, he speaks about that, and the previous owner, the founder of Whole Foods, and he says, you know, if they had kept their costs under control, then it would have still been a private company today. And that's just one example of why a leader needs to be so holistic, because that's something you need to be mind. You need to constantly be learning new things about everything so that you are able to cover and to look at every corner of the company and make sure that, okay, we need some, I see that there's a gap here. I need to employ somebody that can take care of this gap, like employ somebody that can watch our costs and specifically drive down the cost in the company so that we can protect our profit margin. I think John Maxwell calls it the leadership gap. Like, every leader has certain gaps, and so you have to look at those gaps and then surround yourself with the people who can fill those gaps for you.
Wow.
And together you become this incredible team of a high-performing team in a company.
It makes me think of that book on the blue ocean view, that if you're a bird in the sky and you can see the entire ocean, but if you are the fish there, you only see what's surrounding you.
Yeah.
And I think that is that comes to mind now, because as a leader, you need to be that person at the top seeing everything that's going on.
Yes.
And it might not be your strong suit, but it's something that you can identify and realize that, listen, I need to do something about it. Get the right person in there. Or it might be your strong suit, and then you jump in and get your hands dirty a little bit.
Yes.
But to have that viewpoint and know where are we going with this, I think that is the point in trying to manage everything. Because ultimately you are responsible as the leader at the top there.
Definitely. And we know how frustrating it is when leaders don't take accountability.
Yeah.
Like, we see that in government. We see that in many organizations.
Mm.
The moment a leader stops to grow themselves, you can immediately see the impact on the company.
Yeah.
And scary, the scary thing is that sometimes it takes years before the, you know, that growth starts to slow down. But by the time you pick up that the growth has stopped, it's almost too late
sure.
to save the company, especially if it's a big company. You know, big ships are very difficult to turn. Yeah. And so oftentimes there are these bad habits that leaders develop, you know, oh, I'm going to be on holiday 9 out of the 12 months of the year and expect the company to just keep on running.
Yeah.
We had a client, one of our clients the other day, we had coffee with him and he had stepped out of his company for a bit to run another organization. And he said, you know, that was such a big mistake because wow. he kind of thought that the company would be okay. And he checked in, of course, he was there, but he wasn't very hands-on. Yeah. And he said, actually, things came to a halt and he had wow. to almost restart everything again.
Sure.
You know, when he left the other position because he realized, like, this company is going to die if I don't come back and put hands on. So, yeah, very important, yeah.
Yeah. As a leader, you also drive with a purpose. It reminds me of Simon Sinek's start with why, and you need to have a why. So in terms of purpose, how do you see a leader's purpose in that position? Leading the business towards a specific point, towards a target or towards an end goal.
Mm.
How do you perceive this whole philosophy around your purpose?
That's a very good question. Like, we know that life is hard and business is harder. so if you don't have a clear purpose, you're not going to survive. You know, it's just the way it is because If your goal is to have a successful business, but you don't have a bigger purpose than that, you're going to quit the first time you fail sure. in business. And we know that statistically speaking, most successful entrepreneurs are on their 8th or 10th business, and then they strike a success. There's sure. a lot of exceptions to that. It's not a rule. But statistically speaking, that's normally how it happens. It takes time to build up experience. Mm. And the question is always, well, why do these people keep trying? Are they crazy? Yeah, they are probably crazy, which you need to be. Mm. But they have a purpose. You know, their purpose is so much bigger than just building a company. There's a bigger purpose behind that. Mm. Maybe it is that they want to have financial freedom or they just want freedom in general of time and being able to do what they love to do, or they want to provide a legacy, or they want to build something that they can hand over to their children. You know, it is like there has to be that bigger purpose behind it. And then if the leader's purpose is clear, then it's easy to then pass on that purpose to the employees in the company. And that's very important because that's the only way that you can get all the employees to buy into something bigger. It's like, hey, we're going through a difficult time, but everybody knows we are driving to a bigger purpose, so we can hold on. You know, maybe we need to take a pay cut. Maybe we don't get bonuses this year, but we are reaching for something bigger. So it's people are more willing to stay in the trenches a little bit longer because they know we're fighting for something far greater than ourselves. So purpose really, really paints. It's almost like you said, that bird's eye view of what I'm doing. So this might seem small or insignificant, or maybe this is really difficult at the moment, but it's this path is leading somewhere great, you know? And so that purpose really helps us to stay the course, to keep our eyes focused on where we're going. Why am I doing this? Why am I working till late? Why did I miss, you know, this important event? Or, you know, why am I taking a pay cut so that I can start a business? You know, it's like that. That why, that purpose that drives us has to be very, very clear. And it might change over time, which is normal, but we need to remind ourselves of that purpose all the time. Yeah. Why am I here?
Yeah, no, very good. If I can get a bit personal now, you're also a pastor.
Yes.
And how does the being a pastor influence your purpose in business and in leadership then?
Uh-huh. So I think that's a lot on a people perspective. So, you know, as a pastor, I get to work very closely with people, do a lot of counseling, talk a lot, of course, and really work together. You know, you get to see beyond just, you know, the people or the natural how can I say, the labels that we have for people. Oh, you're my client, you know, or oh, you're a supplier or you're an employee. But no, you're a person. And even though you're a client, you're still a person. And, and there's like, I can have a deeper care for you than just my invoice being paid every month. And so even in our company, we really have a philosophy of people first. And so if a client's having a hard time, how can we help that client? You know, how can we support them? Can we give a client a phone call when it's their birthday, or send them a gift, or buy them flowers, or, you know, really get invested in the people behind the business, build those relationships. So I've definitely, as a pastor, that is something that has helped me a lot, being focused on people and being able to have that deeper relationships with people, really caring for the people that work with you. Treating them like a person, like a soul, not just an employee or, you know, somebody that needs to do something, but really have that deeper connection with them and be invested in their lives and having a purpose that goes beyond just showing up for the at the office. You know, it's that longer lasting relationship building that's very important. Like, we have relationships, good friendships with people that are no longer our clients, but we still talk to them, we have coffee with them, and It's. I think that's very important. It always comes back and it builds and it adds. And you often get that unexpected call from those relationships. Hey, I met someone and I gave them your number for this work they want. It's like this person hasn't been a client for years, but and you still get those referrals. So definitely that personal relationship is a very important thing. Yeah.
Yeah, the human element behind it, the human touch.
Yes.
Chris Finning always says that be a human first and then start with whatever you need to do. You were in corporate for long, 14 years, if I'm not mistaken. And then you started Oxano and probably, I don't know when the church came about, but during that time you had a bankable paycheck every month. Mm. And then you walked out and you started your own business, which most of us probably did. And there's a lot of risk behind that. So, so how has that journey shaped where you're going and where you are at the moment? How has that jump into the entrepreneurial area shaped where you are today?
Yeah. Whew. You know, it's it's like it's thrilling at the same time. Yes, there's a lot of scary moments. I had planned my escape from corporate. I mean, my resignation from corporate. It feels like an escape. You know, when I started in corporate, I was like, no longer than 5 years, because I always had the desire to do my own thing.
Okay.
And then I had to stay there for much longer, almost three times as long. My previous manager, like every year I told her, like, this year I'm resigning. This is my last. For the last 5 years, it was my last year. But I knew that I have a higher calling, that I, you know, that yearning for something greater than just working for a company. And that was great. And I learned a lot from that. I would not have exchanged that, you know, that gave me all the experience that I needed and a lot of lessons and learning to work with people and learning a level of professionalism that you don't get from if you're not working in that environment.
Very true.
Yeah. So it's, the risk of that, yes, it was, you know, something that you have to do almost with your ears closed, because most people are saying don't do it.
Yeah.
Like 90% of people are like, are you crazy?
Parents.
Yeah, why would you, family, everybody, why would you trade stability and a good job where you're getting good pay for uncertainty? Yeah. The company was still very young. We started the company in 2021 when I was still working. And we actually moved into these offices while I was still working in corporate.
Sure.
And my office used to be very close. So I would sit there for a bit and I'd be like, yeah, I'm going to my other office now. So I would have my meetings in the morning and then afternoon come and work this side and work both jobs at the same time. And then at some point I just had to, if we can say, pull the trigger. Like, there was no guarantee that I'm going to get paid by the company in a year's time. I had saved up some money to use for the savings. And, you know, running a company is very expensive. There's a lot of expenses. Yeah. So And at some point when the savings started to run out, that's, you know, when the company started actually breaking even. And it's, wow, it's been like, you know, a bumpy ride as it is, yeah, in true entrepreneurship, but we are still here. We are doing well. The company is, yeah, growing. So the risk definitely is paying off, but you still, sometimes you think like, oh, you know, it is like, did I do the right thing? But then when you remember the purpose, you're like, no, it was the right thing. Even if this doesn't work out, it's still the right thing to do. Like, I've learned so much. It's, yeah, pushed me to grow like 10x times faster, because, yeah, you don't have a choice. You have to learn. You have to grow.
It makes us age a little bit faster.
Yeah.
but we enjoy the thrill, yeah, as
I'm,
well.
I'm only 23, actually. Not really.
If you think about the risk-taking part that you spoke of, and you think about the vision that you have for the business, how do you balance those two in terms of not taking too much risk, that you actually expose the entity, the company, versus still growing it and building into that purpose, that vision that you do have?
Yeah, that's always it's a fight, you know, between those two elements of life, not just in business. It's always like, how much should I risk and how much should I try to be careful? But if you look at, you know, the most successful people in the world, or even just the most successful businesses, all of them were started and run by risk takers. Like, just doing what they did was a massive risk. And probably at that time, most people told them, this is a stupid idea, or this is not going to work, or, you know, you can't do this. This is not how things are done. Like, in business, there's no cookie cutter method. Yeah. Like, one person can do the opposite of everybody else and make a huge success. Yeah. And maybe 100 people failed at the same thing. Mm. It's so conditional. It's the circumstances, it's the economy, it's the person that's doing it. Because I've seen many people where there's an idea that fails, and then there's one person that just has the right characteristics, the right leadership style, the right mindset, and they make it work. And it's like a huge success. So risk has to be approached from that perspective as well. Is it risk because of how other people are viewing it, or does it have inherent risk, which everything has risk? Yeah. If I stayed in corporate, there was a risk there that I could still lose my job. Yeah. You know, nothing, COVID taught us that nothing is off the table.
Yeah.
So risk is, there's always risk. It's just, where do you choose to play? You know, it's, do you want to have the ball in your hands, or you want to leave it on the field?
Sure.
Because if you pick up the ball, you might get tackled. You're going to get hit. But if you leave it there, someone else is going to pick it up, and you're going to lose the opportunity. And so it's that balance between, is this reasonable risk, like calculated risk? What is the ratio to, you know, risk to reward?
Sure.
And that's an important balance. Like, there's no point in taking a risk for no reward. Like, why would you do that? But if you know, okay, if this is the risk, I'm going to start my own business, it's, the risk is massive, like huge, putting my whole family on the line.
Yeah.
But on the other side, the reward outweighs that. Like, if this works, you know, there's no ceiling to that reward.
True, yeah.
Whereas in corporate, there's very much a ceiling.
Incremental.
Yeah, there's, and it's slow, and eventually you're going to run into trouble financially anyway, because the ceiling is too slow to, it doesn't keep up with the cost of the economy. So for me, risk is, it's a good thing. And every opportunity comes with that balance of risk. Every opportunity is on the other side of the door of risk. You know, you have to pass through that door in order to buy life's opportunity, the opportunities that life brings your way. I think a lot of people are handed the same cards, but few people actually play those cards. And that's why some people are very successful and most people are not. You know, and I'm talking now in exponential success. Yeah. Like, exponential success requires high level of risk.
Sure.
But it's not blind risk always. Yeah. There's a lot of thinking that goes in behind it. You have to weigh the cost as well, yeah.
Yeah, I posted on LinkedIn a while ago, I think last week or so, about the Gambler, that song.
Mm,
and there's a the chorus part that talks about you need to know when to hold it, know when to fold, and so on. And I think that is managing the risk, managing that expectation, because you know what's in front of you. You don't know what's out there.
Yes.
And you need to evaluate and say, listen, this is something worth taking or not worth taking on.
Wow.
And then manage between the two. And I think that is a skill that we learn through trial and error, unfortunately. And that's why you said the 8th or the 10th business succeeds, because the first one, you'll still learn those lessons.
Yeah.
I think the stat is that only like 10% of businesses last past 3 years.
Yes.
So if you make it past 3 years, you're in the money. You're already there.
Yeah.
As I walked in, I met Daniel and Tsabang and some of the guys that work with you. And you also big on the intern mentorship and coaching part. What is your approach towards building into the lives and to the experience of these youngsters that you bring through the business?
That's very, like, since we started the company, we always said that we want to get young people into the business. I forget his name. The guy who invented the Polaroid. My goodness, why is his name gone? I know his name. Anyway,
now we know.
I'll probably remember right after the podcast.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he actually said that it's much easier to train somebody that has no experience and to build them up and to help them to reach their full potential and even stretch them beyond than a person that has already been molded into a certain pattern of habits.
Sure.
And oftentimes what you find is that when you bring an expert into the business, they come with a lot of baggage and they come with a lot of how they see things to be done and how they've experienced. And that's not necessarily bad.
Yeah.
But if you're trying to build something that's out of the norm, something that's not the usual way of doing things, then you also need people that can think that can take that risk with you and think with you about things differently.
Yeah.
So it really creates a very fruitful, if I can say, fruitful ground to plant and invest and eventually to harvest that investment. When you work with people that are young, they are energetic, they are full of ideas, you know, there's no preconception about, oh, we can't do this. Like, that shouldn't exist. Like, we always talk about it in the office as well. It's like, if you have an idea, talk about it. Like, even if you think it cannot be done or it's not possible now, like, put it on the table. Let's think about it. Like, maybe it's not possible now, but how can we make this work?
Yeah.
And what I also love about young people is they have incredible dreams, you know, like they have that aspiration. Oh, I still want to become this. I want to do this.
True.
And so we also look at how can we help them reach their dreams at the same time as that they help us reach our dream.
Yeah.
And so we collaborate in working together in that. So yes, we will invest in you. We will build you. We will help you. And we will equip you so that you can do the work that needs to be done to help us reach our goals and vision as a company. And really, you know, the company is the dream of the founders. So you have people building your dream. But at the same time, how can we also help you build your dream? And can we create a space where you can live out your dream within the company?
Wow.
And I think that's the best combination.
Very true.
Because that person will then be very invested. They'll be very satisfied in the company. They feel like I'm living out my goals and aspirations and dream while I'm working here. So I'm earning in income and I'm able to do what I love to do.
Sure.
So it's a beautiful thing to work with young people, and just such a vibrant and dynamic aspect to that relationship. It's I love it. I don't think I would choose it any other way, you know.
Do you maybe have one of those stories that you can share where you've worked with this individual and something came of it that actually stirred you, that made you feel like, listen, this is what we are here for?
There was I think I'll talk a little bit more general, but there has been, you know, cases where, because we are very relationship focused, we talk to the guys, we have conversations about their personal life as well, and there's been several times where the person would say, hey, you know, I was there was this situation in my life, or I've been thinking about this thing and we spoke about it. And then you see this almost light bulb moment, like, oh, sure. But this is like, I can do this, or I can become that, or, you know, this is how this has impacted the way, like, you see that growth constantly in them. And that's a very beautiful thing, because you can see the transformation in their lives. You see how they start to think differently, how they approach life differently, how they even, you know, come up with new ideas and new things. So it's that process of growth and transformation that you see happening in front of your eyes. Normally when a young person comes in to the company at first, you know, they're very shy and it's their first experience maybe of like a real company environment, and it's all new to them. But after some time, you see them, you know, like defrosting. If there's... Can you say defrosting? I don't know. Like, what is there's a word for that. A bit like just becoming themselves, but also
fit in. Yeah.
Yes, and also finding themselves. Mm. Like, you start to see them living out and discovering their talents and gifts and being very excited about what's happening and the possibilities. And when you see that, you're like, wow, you know, this is worth it. Like, you can see a person's life change in front of your eyes. And that's definitely worth it. Yeah, it's you're building somebody's future, and that's a beautiful thing. Yeah,
yeah, it's something that I think anyone would give something towards, is to see someone else succeed. But more than that, just that opportunity and build out a career path. Because most of the times our clients are older people, so the opportunity to work with the youngsters and see them actually grasp it and take that opportunity on. I think that is quite exciting.
Yeah.
You describe yourself as an undercover introvert.
Yes.
And I wish John was here, because John also he describes himself as an introvert. How do you balance this media business and the leadership and the training? Because you do a lot of training as well with being an introvert and actually getting energy from within.
So that's actually a skill that I learned in church. Imagine being an introvert and then becoming a pastor. So that doesn't seem like a good idea. But actually, somebody shared a statistic with me the other day. Now I forget who it was, but maybe it was, I don't know, was it in our conversation? But somebody said that statistically speaking, most successful people are actually introverts. Mm. And I was like, oh, yeah.
I can see it.
But I had to learn to accept who I am, you know, not to try and change myself. Like, I've learned to be okay in front of people. Like, I actually enjoy speaking in front of people. But on the other hand, I really struggle in a room of people to, I don't easily mingle, if I can use that term, right? So you often find me when there's a big event, I'll stand alone
in the corner.
And I'll be strategizing, like, how am I going to approach this? Like, every time after years, that's still on Saturday, I was at an event, and it's the same thing. It always happens to me, because that social battery, you know, it's, I have to kind of work myself up and, you know, just like analyze the situation and the groups, and then, okay, that group seems like they're talking about something I can talk about, or I know somebody there. So I've learned to be okay just standing there as well. Yeah. In the beginning, I used to feel very awkward. So I'm supposed to talk to somebody now, but I've learned to just be okay with that and know myself, like, I know how I feel when I need to be alone.
Sure.
Because I know if I push myself beyond those, you know, the boundary of my capacity as an introvert, then I actually become very fake, because now you have to put up this front, you know. But actually inside you're like, I want to go home. I'm tired. So I've learned to be okay with that and just live out that personality, you know, to be myself and just be like, hey, you know, this was a great conversation, but I'm going to go home now. You know, like, I'm okay with going home early from an event, or just picking one person and talking the whole night with that one person. Like, I'm okay with that now. But also knowing that when I need to spend time alone and I wake up early in the mornings, because I know I need to have that time where I'm alone and I can you know, pray, when I can relax, I can read, I can do something that can just refill my battery again, and be okay with saying no sometimes to certain things, you know. Like,
do you have a strategy for an event? If you go into an event to say, listen, I'm going to have two or three conversation, or maybe like John always talks about having a story, something relatable that he can, if someone asks him a question, that he can default into something that happened to him in the week or so on, just to have something up his sleeve to be ready. Do you have a strategy or do you just wing it?
Mostly just wing it, but I've learned that people see a good conversation as one where they get to do most of the talking.
Yeah.
I think it's... I cannot remember names today. Influence people and make friends. What is his... Carnegie, man.
Yeah.
Dale, is it Dale Carnegie?
Yeah,
I don't know why. I have so many names that I want to mention, but I think it's Dale Carnegie. I can't remember who wrote the book, you know, How to Make Friends and Influence People. Yeah, and he says, he uses this example of, where, because he also identifies as an introvert, and he's at this event with this, sitting at the table with this quite influential person, and he had nothing to say, so he just kept asking questions. So how did that happen, and when did you start that, and at the end of the evening, as they were walking out, the guy was like, yo, thank you so much. Like, you are such an incredible conversationalist. You know? And he thought, like, well, I didn't say anything. I just asked you questions. And then it clicked to him. But the person experiences it different than what you expect. Yeah. And so I've used that as my strategy, because I don't know how to always make up a story. Or I don't, like, if it's one-on-one and we have a good conversation, yes, I can talk. But oftentimes when there's a lot of people, and especially when it's a group conversation, I'll be the awkward guy. So I've learned just ask questions, and then people open up and then ask another question. And so they kind of run the conversation, and you just prompt them all the time. And so you don't have to talk a lot.
I'm also quite good at that, just asking questions the whole time. And after a while, you realize that this person doesn't actually ask anything.
Yeah.
So they're either disinterested or they just... It's just that type of person who just wants to talk. Yeah. Myself and my wife watched a series, like a marriage seminar thing at some stage. And this guy who presented it, it's the same as you now, I can't remember his name. He talks about the nothing box.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
So talk to me a little bit about your nothing box and where that is, where you recharge yourself then.
Yeah, that's the most beautiful place on earth, you know. My nothing box often is like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
When it's dark, when the birds are quiet. Sometimes there's this cartoon, like these old school cartoons, you know, like Snow White and the and so there's this cartoon where the bears are sleeping, but spring is coming, and so the ice starts melting, the birds start chirping, and you know, the noise, and tuk tuk, and it's this music, classical, and you know, old cartoon. And so the bears, the papa bear is kind of like, oh, you know, this noise.
Yeah.
And so at one point he loses it and he opens the window and he shouts, shut up! And then the bird's like, and the ice freezes again and everything goes back to snow. And so I have this picture in my head, like every morning almost, where I start to hear the birds and I'm like, I wish I could be like that bear, just tell everything to be quiet. But for me, that's the time where everything is quiet and everybody's asleep, and I can just kind of reflect and not have to feel like I have to do something specific, but have time to just sit. Sometimes I'll just sit in the dark with a cup of coffee and either pray or just sit there and do nothing.
Sure.
Literally a nothing box. Just you know, just think about something or not think about something. And that's, for me, that's very good. Like it helps me to...
Yeah.
Be ready for the day, and I'm a slow start, but I like to take my time in the morning. I don't like it when somebody comes with issues or things early in the morning. It's like, yeah. Even the guys in the office, they know, they're, hey, can you go? And I'm like, hey, let me just get my coffee. And then we can
just wake up.
Yeah, let me just slowly ease into it. Yeah, so that helps a lot with that.
Yeah, I like that. The nothing box happens to me at home as well. And then my wife would ask me, what are you thinking about? And I cannot say. I cannot tell her. It's like nothing. And then she comes back with this study or this seminar thing that we did years ago. I want to move into the podcasting environment quickly. So the company's name is Oxano 7.
Yeah.
I know you told me, but tell everyone then what does Oxano stand for quickly?
So Oxano is the Greek word for grow.
Grow.
So it means to grow, yeah.
Okay, and then since so what is the vision here? What do you guys do? What do you guys practice here at Oxano? What is it that you deliver as a service?
If I go back to when we founded the company, our vision has always been to help other companies to grow and to make a profit, and to increase those profits. Okay. Like the idea of Oxano actually came from our desire to help people. I'm seeing a lot of businesses struggling and asking ourselves the question, like, why is it that everybody has a business but nobody has money? And so we're like, no, we need to do something about this. And that's kind of where the core has always been in helping companies in whatsoever way we possibly can. And so that has given birth to a lot of almost subsidiary services that we are doing, everything from podcasting to events to speaking to consulting to media work. So we've kind of built this group of companies where we do everything holistically required that a company might possibly need to grow. And if we can't do it, then we find people that can do it. So a lot of our work is really putting together teams to help companies. So it might be like, oh, this company is starting this new project and we don't have the expertise, but we know how to get things done and how to structure everything and the things around that. So we would just then put together a team of people that can do those specific things and manage them. And then make sure that, you know, the client gets the benefit at the end of the day, the value. So at the core of Oxano 7, that's really who we are. It's that we're a company that helps companies to grow. And sometimes it can be difficult to put that together into one sentence, but we have the consulting business, we have the media business, we have the academy, which focuses on training and education and so on. And then we do software and things as well. So, we have clients that just do podcasting.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what they need at that time. And in the podcasting, we also work with them. So, hey, how can we grow this? How can you leverage this to grow your brand or your company? What is the bigger vision behind the podcasting? Yeah. Because podcasting is great, but if you don't leverage it well, it's just another podcast. Yeah. And then at some point, you will stop doing it. So it's and then there's the aspect of people, like also helping people to grow behind the people behind the business to make sure that they are growing. So we like to challenge our clients, say, hey, you know, you said this, that you actually do that, you know, that you, and that's like kind of not from, that's just like a friendship type of thing. Yeah. Like we like to reinvest in our clients as friends and help them personally as well, just to remind them and challenge them and give them ideas and those. But yeah, we just love seeing people and companies grow. So that's what we're all about.
Good. Have you been on a podcast as a guest before?
I suppose. I've forgotten.
Let's just pretend it's the first
time. I've been on radio and TV. I don't know. Now I'm trying to think. I've actually been on our own podcast, yes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying. No, I don't think so. I can't recall now.
So if you look at the podcast space, it's something that's growing in South Africa. It's big in the world, big across the globe at the moment, and it's picking up quite nicely in South Africa. Where do you see this going? And what is the real aim of a podcast? Why do people actually go and do it?
Oh, brilliant question. That's a very good question, especially for people listening to podcasts. Because both the person that's creating and the person that's listening has to have a very clear purpose as to what is the end goal. Podcasting is growing a lot. It's still growing. We have seen quite a bit of podcast fatigue, you know, at some seasons. Somebody, you know, once made we were at an event and somebody said, yeah, these days, you know, every John, what are they, John, Dick and Harry is starting a podcast. You know, it's like, yeah, that's true. But if you take it statistically, for you to be in the top 10 podcasts in the world, you just need to do 25 episodes. Mm. Because most, like 90% of podcasts don't go beyond 25 episodes because they don't have a clear purpose.
Sure.
Like most people think like, oh, I'm an expert or I like to talk or, you know, I have something to say. Yeah. And then they start a podcast and that's not bad.
Yeah.
But then they don't actually develop a strategy with the podcast. Not, I'm not talking about a strategy around the podcast, but how is podcasting a part of my strategy? Mm. Like, how can I leverage the content? How can I leverage the network? How can I leverage the knowledge to help my business or myself or other people to grow beyond just the conversation in the room?
Sure.
Podcasting is an amazing opportunity to tap into. I would even call it secret knowledge because people will say things on a podcast that they will never say anywhere else.
Yeah.
If you think about, if you talk on stage, it's very much scripted.
Yeah.
You are careful. If you talk, even in consulting, you're not going to just tell the client everything at once.
Yeah.
Number one, they can't use everything. Number two, some of it's your trade secret. Mm. But in a podcast, people tend to be much more relaxed.
Open.
And so we hear a lot of people saying things that you're like, wow, you know, I would have paid thousands for that knowledge and you just got it for free.
Sure.
So it is an incredible platform to meet new people, to build content for your business, to tap into deep knowledge of people and especially experiences because knowledge gains perspective through experience. And then to how can I use that then to grow my business or to help my clients?
Sure.
In those conversations and the content that I put out, it has to go beyond just, you know, the actual episode.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of methods that can be used to make sure that you leverage things more than just doing the podcast. Mm. But if you have a clear purpose as to what are you trying to bring to the audience and what does this mean for you as your personal brand or the business, then there's always something to talk about, you know, and it's amazing. It's really a great platform.
No, it's very cool. Yeah, so this will be our 51st episode.
Wow.
Our 51st one.
It's congratulations.
Also our first one. Thank you. And then it's also our first one in studio. So a lot of groundbreaking stuff here today.
Wow.
But I think what is exciting for us is also to learn from the likes of yourselves that have been through this journey with various podcasters.
Yeah.
And not just to put it in a studio, but also to grow in the way that we do things. And I think that is also something to look forward to in this year as we build on the platform that came from 2024 going forward. So we're almost out of time, but on the right place, we always ask this last question to all the guests. And that is, are you currently in your right place?
Yes. Yes, I would have to. It's yes, it's an uncomfortable place often, but I think that's how the right place often is, right? It's that place outside of your comfort zone, a place where you are uneasy with yourself many times. Like you're always challenged. So I know I'm in the right place. It's it's a challenging place. It's, you know, you're climbing that mountain, but. Yeah. It is the right place. It's the place of growth. It's the place of development. It's the place of investment. It's the place of relationships. So that's good, you know. And so definitely, yes.
Yeah, the right place, but going places.
Going places, yes. Yeah. I like good. That. Awesome.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Gerald. Appreciate your time. And looking forward to the journey that we're going to have this year coming and see that we grow together. And make a few plans around the podcast and see how we can help each other.
Yeah.
And to the rest of you, thank you for listening, subscribe, and then also we'll see you next time at the right place. Goodbye.
Thank you.